Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It's 8 o'clock Thursday night. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. I'm Jim Christina, and I'm here tonight with our permanent yeah. Part-time co-host, Mr. Russ Avison.
Hey, Jimmy, how are you?
Good, Russ. How are you?
I'm actually really good. I have to tell you, this is the craziest thing. You know, I have this goofy-looking car, the Walter White car, Aztec, right? I've got three of them. And I'm trying to sell one of them, and in the last 4 months, I have had two different production companies call me and rent my car to use in a production. Today they came and took one of them away again.
Get out!
Yeah, $500 a day I get for letting them use my car.
Well, let's see, and that'll be like about 242 days, and you in Ventura County will be squirrel.
There you go. There you go. That's about right. That's about right.
So. We had scheduled tonight D.B. Jackson, Dale Jackson. However, he cannot be found. So we're going to keep trying as the show goes on.
We need to send out a search party.
We need to send out a search party. He's up in Oakdale, which is...
Where is that?
I have no clue. It's up there somewhere. It's up in the lower 40 of the lower 40.
Well, it's California, though.
It is California. And if you want to call in and just talk to Russ and I, the number here is 818-602-4929. And Bobby is tonight with Out West Boutique and Cultural Center. She has her concert series the fourth Thursday of every month?
Right.
And that would be tonight. So Bobby Jean is not going to be here tonight, obviously, which is why Miss Russ Avison is here.
Miss. Hi, honeys.
We're going to be a little irreverent tonight, so have some fun. And, I just got back from Pittsburgh.
Why did you go?
Well, we have a business in Pittsburgh.
Why?
Well, I don't know. It's between 500-mile area around Pittsburgh is 50% of the population base of the United States. So it's a great shipping area. But the story is I just got back from Pittsburgh, and as I was driving into my facility yesterday morning, I was listening to a lady. It was listening to a classical station, and she was talking about this concert series they have going on in this park downtown, which is a very cool park. I've seen it. And it's this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, and then you go, and it's free, and you go in your shorts, and you bring in your lawn chairs and your kids, and you get to listen to symphony music by the Pittsburgh Symphony.
Wow.
And as she was talking, and she got to the point where she says, well, this is the last cut we're going to make, but they will be doing this song this weekend, and you know what it is. And then they hit it. It was the opening strains of the... oh, good God, I just forgot it. William Tell Overture.
There you go.
Well, nobody calls it the William Tell Overture anymore. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Lone Ranger.
The Lone Ranger, yeah. Exactly. I mean, it doesn't sound like an arrow through an apple on a head. You know, it sounds more than
sure.
Exciting adventure from yesteryear. Yeah, Silver and Tonto. And
how was the weather there?
The weather was muggy.
Because it's really been uncomfortable here.
It was. It rained like hell on Wednesday. It was very. Oh, let's see. Wednesday? No, Tuesday. It was extremely muggy and warm in the 80s, high 80s. It was just like, ugh. You know, you go outside, you melt.
Right.
It's ugly. And then I come home, and it was in the mid 80s and muggy, and you know, there is no respite. But so, what's going on with you, Russ?
Well, let's see. It's summer started, and we have we have the ranch with All Dogs Rule,
right?
Day camp sleepovers for the dogs, and we are just getting into our stride for the summer, and so it's been really busy. It's strange. I had heard during the first quarter of the year they kept talking about the economy still stinks, and you know things were going okay with us. Then suddenly. Our business dropped off right after January, and we were down like 40%. We've been in business 15 years. We've never had a down quarter ever. And I thought, oh, here it is. This shoe just dropped. And, you know, and I was waiting to listen for the fat lady.
Right.
And all along on the news, they're telling us, well, people aren't traveling. The weather back east was so bad and so many flights were canceled. And so I thought, well, I don't know if that's ours. But now things have skyrocketed the other direction. And so I guess that was all right. And we're, you know, things are back, right as rain, as they like to say.
Now you're in the money.
Yeah, well, working on it.
Yeah. Well, don't sing, Jim.
Yeah. Right. Hey, so listen, since we don't have our guest,
okay.
At least not yet, but maybe we'll try and reach him later. I really, this would give me a good chance to ask you some questions about writing.
Sure.
I'm not a writer.
Okay.
I have a hard enough time, you know, writing reports when I work with dogs and I have to, you know, write up an evaluation. I hate to do that and I put it off as much as possible. And the only time that it really comes to me what I want to say is when I'm not in a position to write, usually when I'm driving. But, you know, I've read several of your books.
Mm-hmm.
I read this one book by Dale, which is They Rode Good Horses.
Mm-hmm.
I've enjoyed the genre because I'd never been into it. I'd read, Louis L'Amour, one or two books of his, but never really into the Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
And I am really getting into this. But again, it's, I don't know where the stories come from. I don't know how you create not only the story you're going to write, but how do you block it out? How do you know where you're going from beginning to end? Because I know you told me one time that you were writing and you didn't know where it was going to go, but as you wrote, it just sort of went.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know where the story starts and I know where it's going to end. I know usually what the ending is going to be, but how they get there.
Jack lying on his back with his eye looking straight up and then it closed.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's their journey to the end is what the whole story actually is, and knowing the characters as well as I know them because they are a series, and knowing how they behave and how they react to certain things, it kind of helps me along the way because I kind of know what these guys are going to do when they're doing it, and so it just kind of helps fuel the story as it will.
Right, but how do you create a character that is real? I mean, if I see a guy walking down the street and I say, okay, there's a guy that's 40 years old in a business suit and he's got a briefcase and he's probably, you know, either in sales or he's going on his way to a meeting. That's all I know about this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you create that? What the guy's going to think? Because you have different characters are all thinking and working different ways, but
right.
You internally are one person.
Right.
And you would handle things one certain way.
Schizophrenia.
I knew, and I'm sure drugs get involved.
Oh, yeah. Actually, no, they don't. There are times when I wish drugs got involved, yeah, but they don't. I don't know. It just came real easily to me. The characters themselves, I know what I want in a character. I know what he has to be, whether he's going to be a protagonist or an antagonist.
Mm-hmm.
I know, and I love writing bad guys. I mean, I say that in a couple of my books. I say I love writing bad guys because they're so much more fun.
Mm.
Because they're not grounded. You never know what they're going to do. And it's like, for instance, the deacon in the book, The Dark Angel.
Mm-hmm.
You never knew what he was going to do from moment to moment to moment, and he would disappear. And his whole thing was, I wanted to come up with a way that what would a disgraced minister who had lost his faith and taken over by a dark angel, what would he do for penance?
Hmm.
And I came up with, well, there's this place in Arizona, it's called the Teatro de Diablo, which is the Theater of the Devil. And it's an actual place, it's up in the Chiricahua Mountains. And he used to go up there, and he would go into his cave, and he had an altar built. And he would strip down to his waist and he would self-flagellate. That would be flagellate.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. Which is whip yourself.
Yes.
I mean, and to a frenzy. And he would pass out. And then he would, in retribution for him doing that, he was paying homage to the dark angel that had actually taken him over.
Mm-hmm.
But he treats his people like they're okay until they do something wrong. And they took this one kid... and hung him, but he said, "I could, you know, yank this horse and let you drop and break your neck." He says, "But I'm not going to do that." And he just kind of slowly walked the horse out from underneath the kid and left him dancing there.
Dang! So it took a while.
It took a while before he died. Yeah. And then, as the kid, the last thing he saw in his mind or in his eye was the deacon rushing to him and saying, You're mine, Daniel. You'll always be mine.
So Ronan just came, he just came with breaking news.
Our engineer just came running in and going,
I just want to verify the number.
We're still trying to find Dale.
We are still trying. Here, while you're talking, Russ, let me see if we can find him.
Okay. You know, I you mentioned that he goes up into this place up in the mountains,
right,
into the cave, and he whips himself. Okay, we're going to see if Dale comes through here. That's a one.
Hello?
Well, Mr. Jackson.
Who's that?
This is Jim Christina on the writer's block.
Jim, hey, man, I'm just waiting for you. How you doing?
Well, we're doing great. Russ and I are just sitting here just BSing. Russ is our co-host tonight. Russ Avison, meet Dale Jackson.
Hey, Dale.
Hey, Russ, good to meet you.
You too, sir.
Well, I'm certainly glad that we could get a hold of you, Dale. We were kind of wondering if you were going to be around.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been planning on it ever since we talked about it, and just about the time you were supposed to call, I got a call from Lisa Freeberg, who's the producer that's owns the rights to both of my books, and we got into a long conversation about different things there that we've been trying to get caught up on. So I apologize for being a little late.
Oh no, not to worry. You've just been sitting here talking about writing, actually.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. Well, let me while we have you now, and don't go away until we say okay, you can hang up now.
Okay.
Let me give you a little brief history about Dale Jackson. He's known as a writer as D.B. Jackson. He was a wine executive. He was an MP in the military in Germany. He's an author, a screenwriter, a rancher, winner of, my goodness, look at the list of awards. He's won every award that could be won by a Western writer, it looks like. Is that close to being true?
Well, we've had pretty good luck. We've won a couple of them, that's for sure.
Yeah, no kidding. His debut novel, They Rode Good Horses, is under contract as a possible original content television series. Your second novel, Unbroke Horses, is under contract as a feature film.
That's correct.
You're doing very well, my friend.
You know what? I would love to think that that was all skill, but I do appreciate how much luck plays into all of these things, and I'm very appreciative of all of the luck that has gone along with it, for sure.
Well, let me just say this: your background is so varied. How did you manage to get you focused finally on ranching and then into writing, or writing was writing always in your blood, and it just took some time to filter it out to the page?
You know, I think writing was probably not in my blood. I love those stories where people knew at 3 years old what they wanted to do, and they had always had designs and been preparing themselves for ultimately what they ended up doing. That isn't my story. It would be a nice one to have. But no, I never even had any designs or inclination that I wanted to write. I always knew I wanted to be involved with the cattle business, and cowboying was sort of the reward that went along with making that an attractive proposition for me. And we got in the registered Angus cattle business, and again got really lucky there with some good successes. And I was at the same time working in the wine industry, and on the way home one night thinking, it would be interesting to write a story about what would happen to you if you were traveling across the United States and you broke down in the middle of nowhere and you had nothing but your own devices to try to figure out how to survive. And I thought, yeah, that would be really a fascinating story. And I thought, would it be even more fascinating if you didn't have a car or a cell phone and it was 1840?
There you go. Yeah, it would be fascinating.
What if it was just you and your buddy, and you were 10 and he was 15? Now there's a story. Now what happens? And so, over the next few weeks, the story sort of floated around in my mind, and then I decided to try to make something of it and started writing it, and it just took off from there. A fun experience.
When you started with that story and it was just kind of kicking around in your head, at that time, did you think that maybe you would put it down on paper, or was it just something fun you were thinking about?
Well, what happened is, once I started getting the idea, let me back up a little bit. I had this daily commute of about 30 minutes in the country from the winery to our place in the foothills of the Sierras here. So it was you know, not a lot of traffic, and it was a peaceful time, an opportunity for me to wind down from work and wind up going back. And so as I was thinking about this story, I thought, well, it would be fun to write a story. I don't know why I thought it would be fun to write a story. It ultimately ended up not being as much fun as I thought it was.
I feel your pain.
But it seemed to me that would be a fun thing to do. And so once I had formulated some of the characters and some of the premise of the story, I just started putting it down. And you know, once you, you know, Jim, as an author, you know yourself, once you move far enough into a story, then it sort of captures you.
Oh, absolutely.
And so that's sort of what happened with this one. These two young kids kind of attached themselves to me, and the next thing I know, I was up till 2 o'clock every morning trying to keep up with them and write their story and where they were going and what they were doing. And so the deeper you get into it, the more you recognize that maybe there's enough material there really for a story. You know, you don't want to force it or have to have a lot of fill-in to reach the length, but the story was really starting to tell itself, and ultimately ended up an epic story over about a 50-year time frame in these two kids' lives, and that became fun. It was fun writing about them as kids, and then it became fun getting to know them as they developed and lived their lives. And then it was really fun getting to know them as two old guys sitting there wondering what the heck happened and trying to figure out what's next.
Wow.
And so that's how that one all finally came to be. But it was a fun experience.
Well, you know, the story, I have to tell you, I just finished reading They Rode Good Horses. I finished that literally today.
Oh,
and,
great.
And as I was saying earlier before we got you on the phone, this is a genre I'm not really familiar with other than maybe two or three books. I've read two of Jim's books, and so I have a feel for it. But mm-hmm. you really captured me in this book because it starts out, you know, with these two kids and how they even got to know each other. And you saw the friendship developing right away, and you saw the differences in the personalities, and it made you want to know more. I mean, it did for mm-hmm. me, anyhow.
Great. Well, that, you know, to me, one of the things that was always interesting about writing was the experiences that I had in cowboying, and you'd be having lunch or dinner over a campfire at the end of a branding or a big gather, and all these cowboys are sitting around telling stories and making up lies, and a lot of them were stories that had happened that day. Some of them you were part of, and some of them you weren't. But it occurred to me that these guys had such a great talent for telling the story, because what they would do is they would take the things that accomplished writers learn about over probably a lot of years of experience, but they would take these things and weave them in and out of their story, whether it's a good character or a suspenseful situation or a humorous situation, which in most of their cases it was, and figure out how to hook you onto their story and keep you listening to them until they finished it. And it was a skill that they had, and some of them were a lot better at it than others. And so I thought, well, writing has to be the same way. It seems like you owe it to the writer to capture his attention as quickly as you can, and then to not waste his time taking him through pages and pages of exposition that just doesn't mean anything to them. So, and as you mentioned, the way that story rolls, it really does. It really attached me to those two characters, and it seemed like it took enough twists and turns as it was going along that you weren't exactly sure what to expect next. And so there was a little of that anticipation, just wondering where they're going with this story next, that held my attention all the way through as I was writing it. And I'm happy to hear that did the same thing for the reader.
Cool. We're going to take a real quick break here. Dale, while we got you on the phone, don't go away. We're going to give you some music, and we'll just let it go from there. We'll be back in about 30 seconds, and this is the Writer's Block. If you want to call and talk to Dale, the number is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Oh. it would help if I turned the music on. Back, and we're on the phone with Dale Jackson up in I have to ask this.
Yeah.
Oakdale. Where is Oakdale?
Oakdale is just south of Sacramento and north of Fresno, east towards the foothills of the Sierras.
Gotcha. Because I was asked a question earlier and I had to say I had no clue.
Yeah, we're just it's a small little ranching town in the Great Central Valley here, and there's a lot of agriculture in the area, and up and towards the foothills where we are, where the land is a little less desirable for trees and vines and things like that, it's been in native pasture for hundreds of years, it seems like, with for cattle and ranchers in the area.
Gotcha.
And books itself as the cowboy capital of the world, so
well,
appropriately named.
You're there, so it must be close.
A lot of well-regarded cowboys have come from here, rodeo cowboys like Leo Camarillo and his brother and his cousin, and a lot of rodeo people that that you may or may not have heard of, mm-hmm. Call Oakdale home. So, yeah, it sort of earned its name.
There you go. I'm going to stick with They Rode Good Horses for a minute, and possibly Unbroke Horses as well. That's definitely a coming-of-age story. I mean, that it's obvious from the start. You have a couple of the coming-of-age stories. I mean, we're going to throw Unbroke Horses in there with it. And is there something about that genre that draws you to that particular storyline, or does it just come? I mean, I know a lot of writers that don't want to touch coming-of-age stories, and I like them. I wrote one. But I think that, you know, I think it's a good venue to try maybe a first novel or first book on.
Well, I'll tell you, it's for me it was an intentional decision to do that, as writing a Western was. I've just finished my latest novel, which is more contemporary, takes place in 1958 in West Texas. So writing a Western was by design. I don't have any particular drive to continue to do Westerns for the sake of doing a Western. I'm far more interested in good characters and compelling stories. So the answer to the question of why a coming-of-age proposition is that ties in with the Western. I think, first of all, the Western, that 19th-century time period was such an iconic place in our American history, where we hadn't become politically correct yet. We didn't have modern conveniences. We had enough development and industrialization to be a country, but still wild enough that people had to really make it on their own. So I love the idea that America was sort of in its adolescence, and the same thing with characters. I find really compelling these young characters who are in the same stage of their lives, where they don't have the experience of time and age to help them through things, and so they're discovering and learning on their own. So for me, that gives me an opportunity to really plumb the character of the people in the story, and that part really appeals to me. I love seeing how the decisions that a young man or woman, young kid can make, how those decisions affect what happens for the rest of their lives, good or bad, and how delicately balanced life is, both with America as a country. There were so many things that could have made it go other directions that didn't, and the same thing applies to life. I love to see how a raw young kid makes it up through that difficult time period and then becomes hopefully a worthy worthy grown up.
You know,
that was a whole fascination that that I found made it easier for me to explore a lot of the universal literary themes that I think are really important to good storytelling.
You know, what really struck me was the one character you have, Franklin, and how how he almost from the beginning like he almost wasn't growing. He already knew. I mean, he was so in touch with himself, and he knew the things that he had to do to get through life. Where his buddy, I mean, you know, he was kind of going along and trying to learn from him. But I remember that when he got in the fight with that blacksmith's son, and got the crap beat out of him, and and so his buddy comes over and he says, "So now what are we going to do?" He says, "Well, I'm going to go take him on again." He says, "Are you crazy? He just beat you up." And he says, "No. If I let this go unanswered, he's going to think he can do that to me anytime he wants." Like, he already had a good feel for what he had to do and how he was going to get through his life.
Exactly. And you know, and that's interesting that you should pick up on that, because there, in addition to trying to explore some of these really what I consider to be important literary themes, there's also a lot of metaphors for life in there, and that particular one was running away from a problem is never a solution, and sometimes at least facing the problem and following it through to defeat is better than allowing it to hang over you as this unresolved issue. And so Franklin was one of those kind of guys. Hey, look, win or lose, this one's taking care of itself.
Yeah.
And it didn't always work out for him.
Well, no. And in fact, it was interesting also, I have to say that, and I don't want to give, you know, a lot away about the story.
Spoiler alert.
No, but the idea that it also showed kind of how men are versus women, in the sense that, you know, men can, you can pummel each other and then get up and shake hands and it's finished. And that's kind of, you know, where he ended up with that blacksmith's son. He didn't play a big part in the whole story, but that idea that men can get to a point and say, okay, we're good, and let's move on.
Well, you know, that's really another interesting observation, because I think that same thing, you know, if you wanted to make a social commentary about it, you could, because it definitely is a gender-driven proposition, in the sense that, yeah, men tend to be able to do that, and, you know, women tend to take it to a much deeper level. But it's almost a societal kind of a thing that you can see where even as a country, we're having a harder and harder time just letting something go. And so those are sort of metaphors for current kinds of situations that you can see too, without trying to become political or even make a statement. It was never designed to do that. But it's an ongoing part of our humanity, I think, of who we are. And it continues to evolve and take a different shape. But back in that time period, it's fun to take a look at it and say, okay, what do these things look like at a basic level? At a basic level, it's Franklin having to fight the blacksmith's son.
Right.
Because if he doesn't, the guy's going to continue to pick on him.
Yeah, but he knew that, and that I think that was what I liked about that character. I mean, he had a way with the girls. I mean, they all liked him, but I think that came from his confidence. He knew. I mean, he was grounded in himself, and I think that was the thing I took away from that character. He was grounded, and he had that confidence that no matter what happened, he was going to move forward. He knew exactly where he was going.
That's a great way to put it. The other thing about him that I grew to like was that he was one of these characters, and we've all probably known at least one of them in our lives, probably not two, but at least one, who had this ability to be so unpredictable that they're almost predictably unpredictable. You could count on Franklin doing exactly what you didn't want him to do, but it was pretty good bet he was going to do it anyway.
That's right.
Well, let me pick your brains for a minute, Dale.
You bet.
You've won numerous awards, and I can't imagine what the feelings would be like to have won an award like Western Heritage Wrangler or Laramie. What does that feel like? I mean, you got to be thrilled. You know, inside you got to be dancing.
Oh, you do. You know, it's and I think you have to be careful about that. There's two things that I think are really risky about an award. One is that getting yourself to the point where you believe that you won that award is the exclusivity of everyone else around you. You know, there's a certain amount of circumstantial luck involved. I think you probably do have to have a pretty respectable piece of work to be able to compete. But you have to keep in mind that you resonated with those judges that time. Next time, somebody else will resonate with.
Sure.
So there's that luck element of it.
Do you feel like you're sitting there and you're holding this award in your hand and you're thinking to yourself, "Crap, I stole this thing. I really didn't earn it, but they gave it to me, and I'm going to run like hell before they figured that out and try to take it back."
Well, that's how I felt like when I had the first book published. But the award, what you're talking about, that feeling of excitement, and particularly the Western Heritage Award, that is the sort of the pinnacle of...
Yeah, that's the Oscar of the writers.
A long shot. You know, there's they've been giving that award for 52 years. And in 52 years, I think they've awarded that 46 times.
Wow.
So there were some years they didn't give the award to anybody. There's only one award given for the best novel. There's not a finalist. There's not a runner-up. There's not a bronze or silver medalist. It's one award, one year. And so when I was notified that Unbroke Horses had won that award, it literally was an honor beyond any expectation. And absolutely the thrill of a lifetime, without question. There is no way to understate what an enormously gratifying feeling that was. And for a couple reasons. One is, you know, you have distinguished yourself by being thrown in with company like on the Wrangler Award, for example, like writers like James Michener and A.B. Guthrie and Cormac McCarthy and you know, all these great writers who have come before us, and to find your name on a list with them is beyond anybody's expectation. It was certainly beyond mine. You know, Larry McMurtry is on that list with Barbara Kingsolver and lots of really well-regarded authors. To be included in a group of people like that is pretty humbling.
I would imagine.
Really thrilling. So, yeah. So there's no question that particular award was just the absolute high point. The ceremony itself, which is the equivalent on some level of the Academy Awards, and you're standing up there addressing an audience of 1,000 people, and you've got the monitors in front of you, and you're being televised on these great big screens all around the room, and the teleprompter is there. It's a feeling that is a pretty rare experience for most of us. It was for me, certainly.
Okay.
It makes you very appreciative, and it's sort of a confirmation that what you've been trying to do, you know, at least a few other people agree that you may have accomplished that, and so that's a very rewarding experience.
Now, you know, two things. I mean, I've never met you. This is the first time we've spoken, but you sound like a pretty humble gentleman. And one of the things you said is that a lot of luck was involved. Now,
Right. One
thing I have learned is that what you start out with your original manuscript and what ends up being published can very well be different stories almost. How close is this to what you originally started with? And again, I'm going back to They Rode Good Horses because that's the only one of your books that I've read.
Okay. Well, both the two books that we're talking about, They Rode Good Horses and Unbroke Horses, the final stories are very, very close to the original concept and the original manuscript. The things that change, of course, are all the corrections of the things that you did wrong. You know, when Brady has blue eyes when the story begins, and halfway through he's got brown eyes.
God, I hate that.
And you catch goofy things like that, or the names and locations. I mean, the logistics of the story changes. And then as you're moving through and redoing the manuscript, you know, you find that you may have to resequence a few things, you may have to reduce some things and increase the size of some things. But basically, the stories were fairly close, very, very close in the end as they were in the beginning.
Excellent.
So it's, and I think to the point of your question, the rewriting process is the is an incredible self-examination period to go through. The first one, I had the benefit of copy editors who were going through and trying to find as many typos as they could. And then, of course, when you get the final copy back and you find out that even they missed some of those, it reminds you of how difficult of a process it is. On road courses, I have the benefit of Pat Labruto being the editor on that, and Pat is the guy who has edited a lot of Stephen King's novels. He's edited the Louis L'Amour Estate, the Dune science fiction books, and he's also a good author and a well-established New York editor in his own right. So having the benefit of him helping me with that story was invaluable. And I would absolutely encourage any of your listeners out there who are writers that think that they can't afford an editor, if you're serious about your craft and you really are trying to move yourself up to the next level, I would save my money, do whatever you needed to do to be able to afford the best editor you can get. And that's a service that you will never regret, whatever it costs you to get accomplished.
All right, one last thing I'm going to ask you. I understand that sometimes, you know, you may have like there were a few kind of graphic scenes of scalpings and arrows going through people, and does your editor ever come to you and say, look, we need to tone this down, or we need to maybe take this part out because it doesn't play right in the story, or you're going to offend people? I mean, do those sort of things happen, or do you get to stick with what you got?
No, they do happen, particularly on unbroke horses. But in the first book, the editor, like I said, was primarily concerned with copy editing as opposed to content editing, so I didn't really get any of that kind of input. And my explanation was that in order for me to have these characters feel like they accomplished something meaningful, my strategy was not to try to make the characters extraordinary in any particular way. What I had to make extraordinary was their journey. So these are just normal people that you can identify with. And what makes them extraordinary isn't that they were given any particular talents or characteristics that would make them better than anybody else. But what they did is they came through a lot. And so I needed to dig a pretty deep hole for them to climb out of in order for them to be on level ground and look like that was a major success. So the editor on the first one really didn't have any input on that. On the second one, Unbroke Horses, that's an extreme version of trying to bring to the reader a range of emotions that I felt it was important to strike. And I needed you to hate some of those characters. I needed you to hate some of those scenes, and to find deplorable some of the things that these guys did, without being very graphic or gratuitous. And so my goal was to set the scene and to sort of let you see the results of that, and then let the reader develop in his own mind the details of how that happened.
Gotcha.
And that worked pretty well. But on the second one, Pat came back to me and he said, wow, he said, I'm about a third of the way through this thing. He says, this book is scaring me to death. I thought he meant it was so bad that he was frustrated with it.
How did I get wound up with this thing?
There you go. I got to cut you off for a minute, Daredale. We're going to take another real quick break and we'll be back. You can call in and talk to Daly if you like. The number is 818-602-4929. And the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Out West Boutique and Cultural Center. You're back on the Writer's Block with Jim Christina and tonight's guest host, Russ Avison. On the line, we have D.B. Jackson, Dale Jackson, up in Oakdale, California, and the writer of two wonderful novels. They Ride Good Horses and Unbroke Horses. And Dale, you have also been associated with a number of short stories and a number of compilations or anthologies. And we'd spoke about one of them at the Cowboy Festival last April when they had included you in a dais that we were on, and it was about the lawmen.
Right.
Why don't you go into a little bit about that?
All right. Well, first of all, just to give our listeners here a quick rundown on the short stories. These short stories were requested by publishers who were putting anthologies together, and I felt it was a great opportunity to be able to participate with a lot of really good writers and to work with different publishers. And these short stories are about 5,000 words each. The one that we're talking about that we discussed in Santa Clarita was in an anthology called Outlaws and Lawmen, and the particular story in that one again included a young kid, and it was sort of the predecessor for and the inspiration for Unbroke Horses. It involved a young boy who is kidnapped by these escaped prisoners. It was called A Blood Red Moon. Is the title of the story, and this young kid is kidnapped, and it's the story of what he goes through, and he has a bit of a religious background, and he and one of his captors end up developing sort of an intellectual relationship as they're going through this whole emotional experience of being under fire by the lawman and this outlaw. And ultimately, I won't tell you the end of the story, but ultimately it ends up with the outlaw being the guy who decides to make a choice that helps the kid redeem his life. So it's sort of a bit of that coming of age thing, but again, one of my favorite themes, it involves a young boy and life coming at him at a pace that's much faster than he can handle, and then giving him at least one small thing that he can hang on to salvage himself and to have hope for the future. So that's that particular story.
So what are you working on now, other than Waiting on Rain, which I understand that you have completed?
Right.
And what's down the road for Dale Jackson?
Well, currently I've got a story that I started, and my agent wanted me to complete as quickly as I can because we've got a publisher who's interested in it. It's called Harden and Tripp, Murder on the Bearpaw, and it's a contemporary suspense novel that takes place in Montana. And the basic storyline is that there are two young guys working on a cattle ranch up there, and they'd like to start an operation of their own. They don't have any money. They decide to enlist in the military, end up in Iraq, and do a couple of tours of duty over there, save enough money to come back and invest in a cattle operation of their own. Well, in the meantime, they run afoul of a paramilitary group that's harboring away in the wilds of Montana back there, and a sniper bullet takes out one of their coworkers, and then it's this developed story of suspense between the paramilitary group and the local law enforcement that is ill-equipped to deal with them. So that's the current novel that's in play with me right now. But I'm actually spending most of my time working on the rewrite of the screenplay for Unbroke Horses. We've got a meeting coming up next month, and we'll need to have that one pretty much underway. I've just completed the episode summary, the beat sheets, and the first season pilot and 10 episodes for what we hope will be a TV series, original content from They Rode Good Horses. So that's where my time is going. And that the whole experience of screenwriting and getting involved with that element of the entertainment industry, television and film, is very, very exciting, and it's a fun one that I think most authors would really gravitate to if they have the opportunity.
Okay, 3 minutes or less. How do you handle writer's block?
I don't get writer's block because what I do is. If I consider writer's block really to be a crossroads, and when I arrive at the crossroads, I've got four decisions. I can go forward, I can go left, right, or I can go back. And I'll normally try to go forward. If I'm unable to find a solution to going forward, I'll try left or right. If that doesn't work, I back up, start over, and end up at a different crossroads.
That's what Margaret Brownlee said, too.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, when she was on, she was asked the same question, and that was pretty much her answer, that she just went back. Because you obviously made an error someplace.
Yeah, because you'll paint yourself into a corner invariably.
Oh, sure. Sure, I totally get that. Okay, give me some web addresses and stuff that we can reach Dale Jackson, i.e. Email addresses, websites, etc.
All right, my website is www.dalebjackson.com. That's D-A-L-E-B, like in Bravo, Jackson, J-A-C-K-S-O-N.com. And my email address is dalebjackson@dalebjackson.com. So you can find me at those two locations. I'm also on Facebook, and you can find me at Dale Jackson, whatever the Facebook addresses are, or at DB Jackson.
So you've been a busy, busy, busy man. I tell you, just for the listeners out there, Dale and I think we met a couple years back, but then last April we got to sit down next to each other for 2 days, and I was just so impressed with your demeanor and the way you held yourself and the way you presented yourself. It was just amazing to me, and I just loved watching you work.
Well, thank you. We had fun. I was so glad that we got to sit next to each other and get a chance to know me. For me to know you, because we had. So much to talk about, and it sure made the time go by in a real fun way. So I really enjoyed that. That was a great venue.
Isn't yeah, it?
It
is a great venue, and I always look forward to going to back every year, because Bobby Jean, she always kind of feels sad for me and lets me come back. So
me too.
Yeah.
Well, and Out West does such a great job.
They
Bobby
really,
Jean
really
and
do.
Are so wonderful to work with. They do so much for Western writers and the people in the music industry. They're great.
They really are, and you know they're really trying to push it. In fact, we're trying to get some musicians and songwriters in here as well. So it's going to be, it's just, the show is just building and building and building and building, and we're so glad to see it, because, again, it's just taken us so long to get it on the air.
Well, I'm really glad you did. I'm excited about it, and this is such a great venue. I really appreciate being on here, and I think I wrote in a note to you that we've got some other people who would love to be on here as well.
Yes, you did, and we appreciate that. In fact, my wife is going to be contacting them. She's our booking gal now, so.
Oh, sweet. That's terrific.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you guys for inviting me on, and it was a wonderful experience being able to spend the time with you.
Oh, it was great having you, Dale, and it's just too bad we couldn't track you down a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I apologize for that. I couldn't get untied from that.
It's so. Not to worry about it. We had a ball.
Hey, Dale, pleasure meeting you. Thank you so much. And just to shout out to anybody who's interested, if you're looking to read some Western novel, this is a great place to start. They Rode Good Horses. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I read it in 3 days. It was awesome.
Oh, thank you so much.
You betcha.
And again, thanks for calling in, Dale. We loved having you on the show.
It was my pleasure.
Okay.
Thank you again.
Take care, bud.
Bye-bye.
And Russ, thank you for coming in and taking over for Bobby Jean.
I'm not as cute, but I thank you for allowing me to do that.
Yeah, well, you're still a nice guy, and we love having you here on the show. And as
thank
a matter
you.
Of fact, it's like old home week when you walk in, because everybody runs over there and wants to pat you on the back and shake your hand.
Yeah, we were here 4.5 years.
Yeah, you were. Yeah. And we want to be here at least that long. So
all right.
So, I mean, you know, you always have a job here if you want it.
Thank you, sir.
And you have also agreed to come in and co-host if I'm not available to come in.
Yeah, well, we'll see how that
works.
We'll
see how that works out. Okay, we're going to end the show. Have a real fine rest of your week. And we'll be talking to you next week on The Writer's Block.